Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday. Happy Monday for most of us, anyway. Damn. Apparently, oh, poor Adam, you've had a day.
Yeah, I've had a day. I mean, I take a couple days off from work, come back, and it was almost like, oh, Adam's gone. We're all going to take the time off. Yay!
Oh, don't you just hate when that happens?
But then the worst thing happened. It's almost like losing a child. Sean got me a really nice bottle of this Belfort bourbon. It's one of the few bourbons that everybody in our group agrees on.
And it's one of the few celebrity-endorsed bourbons that we all like.
That's actually halfway decent.
Yeah.
Ed Belfort, former goaltender for the NHL. Well, apparently hot weather does a wonder on bourbon, and the top came off and drenched my passenger seat with the good stuff.
Well, hopefully you don't get pulled over anytime soon.
Yeah, I try to explain that.
No, I swear I just left the whiskey in the car too long.
Have you been drinking today? No. Well, I just breathed in, and I feel like I've been drinking. Well, get in the back.
See, this is why they make those PSAs about checking for your kids in the back seat, man. You know, except I guess it should be like check the back seat to make sure you didn't leave any whiskey back there.
Hi, folks. Adam from Happy Hour. I just want to let you know that bourbon, the top can come off in extreme temperatures in car. So take an extra moment to check on your bourbon before leaving the car. The more you know.
Like, that's just unfortunate, man. I am so sorry that, you know, that you had to experience this loss.
Well, I know. There's still, like, a couple shots left, and maybe I'll do that on Friday, but I'm looking at it, I was like, it's the equivalent. I remember being, like, 5 years old, and my parents gave me a balloon at the carnival, and then it just floated away.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hated balloons. I hated balloons after that.
Well, hopefully this will mean you're going to hate bourbon after this.
No, I'll just smell it every time I get in my car.
Yeah, I do feel kind of bad. Like, you're going to be reminded of this delicious bourbon that you can no longer drink.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to clean that up. I don't know, if like, baking soda. You know, just take the car out and get it detailed.
Well, I know a guy.
Do you?
I do.
All right, well, I'm going to find... let me find your guy.
Like, this is definitely... I feel like we can definitely make this happen.
All right.
But we have a lot of stuff to do today, and most of it is probably going to be of some relation to your Detroit Lions. As, well, it wasn't pretty by any means. It was pretty ugly, to be quite honest with you. But the Lions got it done against the Rams in week one.
Yes, they did. And, we'll talk more about it when we're actually talking about it. But
we're getting into it right now.
Or we're in the weeds, okay. I love the feeling of being disappointed by a win. It's like, wow, they had them by like 17-3 at one point, and then they had to win in overtime. They let them back in, and you know, most of the time I'd be like, hey, they squeaked out a win, fantastic, good on the Lions. So hopefully next week they can do something similar. But now it's just like the Lions are there's so much expectations weighing on this team, where you're like, you let them get back into the game. You let them start winning. You had to use a field goal to tie it up and then win it in overtime. I mean, a win is a win, but pretty sloppy.
Yeah, there were some things that I was very much not impressed by, and there were some things that I was very impressed by. And you know what? Let's get the negative stuff out of the way first. Like, your defense. Really... no one looked particularly good. Like, the secondary wasn't great. Your linebacking core, other than Anzalone and Jack Campbell, were not great. They were struggling in coverage a lot of the time, which is letting Stafford kind of pick you apart a bit. Alex Anzalone did have kind of a standout game, though. Two tackles for loss on the first drive alone, 13 tackles on the day. And your defensive line, man, you know... At times, they didn't look... they looked pretty good. I mean, certainly Hutchinson and Marcus Davenport did what you needed them to do. But you weren't getting a whole lot of pressure on Matt Stafford. Stafford seemingly had... And this is where I kind of have a problem. Because you came into this game against a Rams team that was already missing two of their starting O-linemen. And Jonah Jackson playing out of position. And then you lost another another O-lineman in the middle of the game and brought in a guy who promptly proceeded to basically really kind of screw over his own team as they were knocking on the door of another touchdown. That, I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, but as they were about to score, they were at first and goal. Like, they basically got gifted a touchdown and weren't able to pull it off because twice in a row, they ended up having holding penalties called on them by the same guy. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, luckily, it worked out in favor of the Lions that they ended up getting pushed back far enough that they were not ultimately able to convert on that and had to settle for a field goal. But, man, the fact that all that happened and you still couldn't seemingly generate any pressure on Matt Stafford with basically an O-line being held together by duct tape and chewing gum is sad, dude. There's no other way around that. Like, I can't really give you a whole lot of credit when that was going on. Again, like I said, Alex Anzalone had some great, great tackles and hits on the day, but there wasn't a whole lot of pressure on Stafford. No one was really getting covered. How was Cooper Kupp ever open again after Puka Nacua died? Like, after he left the game, Cooper Kupp should have been double, triple covered. Like, how is he open at any point ever again in that game? No one has been able to sufficiently explain this to me in a way that makes it make any damn sense. I can't. I'm sorry. Like, once he was gone, like, that should have been the guy that was covered, that you were just all over him. Like, and it just wasn't that way. And that disappoints me, admittedly, a little bit. That's where I was ultimately not really thrilled there. But, like I said, I'll give credit where credit is due that you did end up holding a fairly stout in there towards the end. And then once OT came around, I will give all the credit here that Dan Campbell just turned it on and just decided, you know what? We're going to run it down their throat, and they're not going to be able to do anything about it. And that is exactly ultimately how it went. And I was rather happy to see that there at the end. Like, we're just going to give it to Montgomery. Just keep running him. Just keep going. You know, we'll throw an occasional run to Jahmyr Gibbs in there too, but it's going to be the David Montgomery show from here on out. And my, did he show up last night. He absolutely was the star of this game. Well, there's another guy you can make an argument for. We'll get to him in a minute. But in the first half, he was doing pretty well. Then Jahmyr Gibbs stepped up in the second half and got the first rushing touchdown of the game. So you didn't even see a whole lot of Montgomery in the second half. But when it came down to it in overtime, there he was. 17 carries for 91 yards on the night, of course, the game-winning touchdown. 5 carries for 45 yards in overtime alone. Like, they knew when you need to get some yardage in a situation where it's like do or die, that he's your guy and he's going to take out pretty much anything in his way. Like, someone having a guy like that to complement someone who's got the speed that Jahmyr Gibbs does, like, it really just reminds you just how lucky we are as Lions fans to have that at this team's disposal. Now, the other big standout from last night, Jameson Williams, is in fact him. This is a guy that, you know, I've heard people say that he could break 1,000 yards this year. And, you know, after watching him last night, I could see that happen.
121. You're in that game.
Yeah, you're a good chunk of the way there already. Like, it was obvious, I think, that the Rams came in, like, deciding that they were going to make sure Amon-Ra St. Brown was never open and never targeted. And it didn't matter because J-Mo could still torch a secondary like nobody's business. Of course, there was that deep shot that we've been waiting for Jared Goff to take that he went and caught and ran the rest of the way for. But He had some really nice yards after the catch plays against the Rams secondary. It was really nice. Like, he was able to burn them in their coverage and get plenty of yards after the catch on top of, like, okay, you have a legitimate deep ball threat on this team, and you saw Jared Goff felt a little more emboldened to take those shots downfield because you have a guy that can make those plays happen. It was really nice to see that all the hype finally really come to fruition here. Like, this is the game that I think a lot of us have been hoping to see out of Jameson Williams for a long time. And you got it last night. Like, he's going to be a huge threat for this team going forward. Like, you finally have got a core of guys that no secondary in the world is going to be able to cover all these guys. Like, you're gonna have someone open and get taken advantage of on some of these. Like, it's just going to happen. And last night it was Amon-Ra, but I think we've proven here J-Mo cannot in any way, shape, or form be overlooked. Like, everything that was said about him in training camp was absolutely, ultimately proven true here. Now, it is kind of odd that everyone else basically was absent as far as your wideouts go. 13 catches for 96 yards for the non-JMO guys last night. St. Brown and Sam Laporta could not get open to save their lives, but you kind of expected that was going to be the case. But you don't have a whole lot of depth beyond that. Like, Khalif Raymond was running more than he was actually receiving. And other than that, Gibbs, Montgomery, and Brock Wright were the only other guys who caught passes at all. So, I mean, you're going to have to figure that out at some point. Like, you're going to need a third wideout option here, because teams are, like, just shutting down your two main guys, letting J-Mo do what he does, but eventually they're going to catch up to that, and you're going to need to have at least one other option that could actually scare a defense. Whether that ends up being Donovan Peoples-Jones off the practice squad, I don't know. We'll see soon enough, I suppose. But ultimately, like I said, it's an ugly win, but it's one that you absolutely desperately needed, and I'm not going to complain about it in any way, shape, or form here. Like, are there some concerning things? Yes, and, well, we've touched on a few of them. But overall, I feel like I can't not be happy with this. We're going to hit a quick break. Plenty more to come this afternoon. It is happy hour. Stick around. Back after this. Maya, it was certainly nice to see the Rams just royally screwing things up last night, was it not? You had Matt Stafford going and throwing into the end zone to a Lions player.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
He forgot what team he played for and was just instinctively throwing towards the blue jerseys.
I think that had to have been what it was. So Kirby Joseph picks him off for a touchback in the end zone. And then, and this is the other thing where you're probably going to look at it and say, this is why the Rams ultimately lost. Sean McVay decided to do a little bit of Dan gambling. Decided to go for it. They're facing 4th and 4 at the Lions' 23-yard line. They had been moving the ball fairly decent at that point. Nacua was still in the game, and no one could cover Cooper Kupp for anything. And they decided to go for it on 4th and 4 instead of just taking the points. And ultimately, a pass to Cooper Kupp ends up incomplete. Lions get the ball back on downs and immediately go down the field to score a touchdown after that.
Nice.
You like to think that, I mean, if that play hadn't gone that way, we're not even talking about a Lions OT win. Those 3 points make ultimately all the difference. I mean, there are a few times when Dan Gamble went Dan Gambling, and it by and large, it worked. Like, there wasn't a point at which you ultimately had to, you know, turn the ball over on downs because it just, you couldn't get it done. Like, his gambles, and there were a couple. I mean, you had at the Rams 27 early on in the second quarter, and yep, Montgomery's going to run it, and it worked.
Yep.
Like, you had a couple times where he did what he does, and there's a reason that he can do it and he can get away with it. A lot of other teams can't. Like, in McVay's case, that was probably not the smartest move to make, ultimately, especially when you ended up, you were tied at the time, just take the lead somehow. I don't blame you given how well your passing game was doing up to that point. But it was still kind of nice to see that, okay, we can get away with this stuff. Other teams really can't and probably shouldn't. So despite all that, you ended up coming away with a win. How concerned are you moving forward? Or is this just kind of, well, you know, early season, everyone's rusty, just kind of shaking it all off, so to speak. Like, are there real concerns for you with this team going forward? Or is this just, you know, it's week one and week one's weird like that?
Neither. I think they're going to look at, Campbell's going to be looking at some tape. I think the team is going to be spending a lot of time watching tape because they, you know, VCR, they use like digital. There was a lot of good things that were done. They were able to sack Stafford a couple times. They were able to get an interception. They were really able to put pressure on their offensive line. But there was a lot of screw-ups, and they're going to tighten that up. I mean, this is the kind of game that you could have, you know, in the middle of December. It's good to get it done and over with so they can say, oh, wait a minute. Oh, we're not bulletproof. We're not going to just be given the W. You got to go out there and earn it. And this was good to get it out of the way.
That's ultimately what I'm hoping for. Still ultimately get the W out of it. Because the secondary in particular is something that I'm still going to be concerned about, I think, for a while. Like, offensively, I'm not. You can't cover J-Mo and Amon-Ra and Laporta all the time, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, that I'm not as concerned about. And then no one's figured out how to stop David Montgomery. Just like, we're just going to let him keep doing what he does, and we dare you to find a way to stop it. And the Rams could not.
No.
The secondary is going to be a concern for a while, though. I mean, you saw how open, even, like I said, after Puka Nacua got taken out, how Kupp was still getting open as often as he was. He still managed to get, like, 14 catches for 110 yards, and the touchdown in the fourth quarter that basically set up overtime. Like, you also end up giving a 63-yard pass to Tyler Johnson to end the third quarter. Like, where's your coverage at? Like, Stafford, in the second half of that game, put up almost 200 yards of the 300 he threw for on the day. There is a little cause for concern going forward with that, and that was easily last year the biggest issue that we found was, by and large, the secondary. Like, it's a very much was a boom or bust day. Like, either you really screwed up or you really did well. Like, Brian Branch had a couple of really nice pass breakups. One that was almost an interception. And then, of course, Kirby Joseph, who had an actual interception. And at one point, I thought Carlton Davis was going to end up with an interception. Like, there realistically should have been, like, three pickoffs for the Detroit secondary.
Yeah.
But then so many other things that went wrong. It's just, that's just apparently how this team works, man. It's just like this kind of, like, either it's really good or really bad and nowhere in between. And for a team that's really expected to step up their game in the secondary this year, it's a little bit worrisome for me, I would say.
One thing, though, I mean, Dan Campbell going into this game, he was worried about his kickers. We talked about it. He was worried about his kicker.
Dan Campbell hates his kicker. We've been saying it all, you know, since he got here.
Yep.
But
Jake Bates was perfect. Two field goals, two extra points. He went 4 for 4 on the evening. I mean, what else can you ask for?
Look at him making the transition over from the USFL without a...
Oh, yeah, the commentators went shut up about that.
Right.
Former Michigan Panther. Which, actually, with a pretty cool color scheme, if I do say so.
But he was perfect last night. You can't ask for a whole lot more. Like, he ended up helping pin the Rams at their own 22-yard line on a kickoff. Like, there were some really good things out of that. I mean, not a whole lot else really happened, except for, okay, we got to talk about Ennis Rakestraw real quick. Like, Jack Fox put down a punt that was absolute perfection. Would have pinned the Rams inside their own 5. Rakestraw tried to knock it down and ended up knocking it through the end zone and starting at the 30.
Oh, man.
Like, Fox did everything you needed him to do there, but put that place that thing perfectly. And he knocks it in the end zone and like, why, man?
Yeah, Campbell's like, can I talk to you for a minute? Come here for a second. Have a seat.
And as we do, do a little bit of the Dan Gamble report here. He had one decision to go for on fourth down, and the one we talked about where Montgomery ran it and got the first down. It was absolutely the right thing to do.
Yep.
You can argue that the fourth and five later in the game, where they were still down by 3 points, was a questionable one. It was at the fourth and five of the Detroit 35, but I'm fine with that one. Like, you're honestly a little too far out for if you hadn't gotten that, you would have been rather screwed. So I'm okay completely.
I love how aggressive Dan Campbell is. He's not afraid to try. He has enough faith in his team to where he can go ahead and make us bite our fingernails.
Exactly. As far as the coaching goes, my only issue really is the dinking and the letting the Rams kind of dink and dunk their way down the field and just kind of have at it with the short game. I get they're trying to sell out to, you know, not to prevent a huge downfield gain, but still kind of something that was kind of frustrating to watch. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio.
Right.
It is happy hour. And I know this may come as a shock to some of you, but things happened in the NFL this week that had nothing to do with your Detroit Football Lions.
That's right.
Things happened. We overreact to them. That's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
So let's get some overreactions in here for week one. My show, the music, please.
So I got an overreaction, or is it a reality? The Panthers are the worst team in the NFL again.
That is not an overreaction. That is an absolute 110% fact. Bryce Young still looks like he might honestly be a bust at this point. 161 yards, 2 picks, no touchdowns, 13 for 30 on the day. A passer rating of 32.8, which is
not good.
Really, really not good. They were down 30-0. At the half against the Saints. That's really bad considering how trash that team is. They went 1 for 10 on third down. They were only averaging 3.5 yards per play, had 3.9 yards per pass attempt. This was about as bad as things possibly could have gotten for them. And I don't think there's any overreaction saying that Carolina is the worst team in the National Football League.
There's a couple of these. I'm pretty sure where you're going to go with this, but this one could go either way. Home field advantage is out of reach for Cincinnati.
I would not say that home field advantage is out of reach yet. I mean, that was an ugly loss to the Patriots, a team that I don't think anyone expects to do literal anything this year.
They got beat by a haunted house is what happened. There was a shell of their former self.
They really are. But, you know, this is what Cincy does. Like, Joe Burrow is 1 for 4 in season openers. Like, it's just, this team gets off to a slow start. Plus, when you have the distractions that have been, you know, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, and Higgins trying to get a new deal, and the will he, won't he played that day in with Jamar Chase. Plus, the fact that you lost your, star running back in the offseason to Houston and Joe Mixon. This was kind of not that shocking. It was still bad, but it wasn't as shocking as one might think, considering how much upheaval there's been with this team this offseason. You did not have a score in the first 5 possessions for Cincy, of course. You punted 3 times, you fumbled, and then there was a turnover on downs before they finally even got on the scoreboard at all. I'm not going to say that it's over for them as far as the possibility of home field advantage in the playoffs, but you know what you got to do. You got to beat KC next week.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to.
That's a big ask.
That's a lot to ask of any team, but that's the kind of the position you find yourself in. If you do that, then I feel like there's absolutely still a path for you to clinch home field. If you don't, and you keep losing like this, then maybe give me 2 or 3 weeks, and then maybe that is reality after all.
The Giants won't win more than four games. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
They'll be lucky to win four. God, Danny Dimes looked absolutely terrible on Sunday. 186 yards, two picks, completed barely half of his passes. Had a pick six on the day at that. Your O-line's trash, your QB's trash, and your defense wasn't great either. You got carved up by Sam Darnold. Like, what are we even doing here? Your offense is about as bad as it possibly could have been and has only gotten worse. This team's going to be lucky to win four games this year. And I would say already you're looking at, A, the Giants really regretting having handed all the money they did to Danny Dimes. And I think you're also really looking at, well, you might be looking at replacing him as soon as humanly possible. Yeah, no, that's reality. In fact, that might be overly generous.
Yeah, I mean, there's the G-men, there's a lot of work to be done over there. So this one could go either way. I'm kind of curious as to where you're going to go with this. Michael Penix Jr. will replace Kirk Cousins at some point this year.
Again, don't want to write the book on a guy after week one of the season. He is just coming off of a torn Achilles. He's also 36 years old. He didn't play in the preseason at all.
He is, but look at his numbers from last night.
155 yards, one touchdown, two picks.
Two picks. That
average 4.5 yards per pass attempt.
Mm-hmm.
10 points in 10 possessions. Not great. I get that. But, again, I expected kind of a slow start here. He didn't play at all in the preseason. He's got a lot of rust to knock off yet. If this keeps up for about a month, okay, then I could see that we're calling, you might be calling Michael Penix Jr. in. And so much for that whole $180 million you paid to Cousins. But I need to see at least a couple more weeks where he's playing that badly before I start thinking that there's a real possibility that Penix could be your starter by the end of the year.
Detroit Lions fans are going to be having to perk their ears up for this one because, yeah, it's about DeAndre Swift. The Bears don't have a running back. Reality what? Or overreaction?
No, that's reality. Like, you're telling me that between him and Khalil Herbert had a combined 12 carries for 34 yards, and 10 of those carries and 30 of those yards were DeAndre Swift. Does Khalil Herbert even exist? Did he even show up to yesterday's game? Where was he yesterday? Like, the idea was that this was going to be a kind of 1-2 punch that would be at least somewhat, you know, as effective as like the Montgomery Gibbs thing, the Thunder and Lightning thing we have going on here. And none of that has actually materialized. Caleb Williams also wasn't good yesterday. And I'll be honest, it's the Bears defense is really what saved them in a lot of ways. Like, the defense did some work yesterday for that team. That's the only reason that they're even, that they're not currently sitting at 0-1 and dead last in the NFC North. And I do feel like if this continues, that's exactly where they're going to find themselves.
Oh, yeah, because they won that game, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
They did because the defense that you had a forced a fumble and a pick six.
I'm trying to remember who they played.
Like a blocked punt. Like, they played Tennessee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The team I picked during the picks on Friday.
Right.
Which, by the way, on Fridays we do picks and we would love listener interaction. We'll talk more about that.
We'll figure out a way to actually make that happen at some point. Or, but
yeah, probably through email. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that, pigeon. You know, carrier pigeon. I mean, the fact that, you know, the running backs did zilch and they still won the game, that's pretty impressive.
I mean, give credit there. Your offense was just trash completely on Sunday and you still won. So they can't take that away from you, at least.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really bode well for the future, at least in the short term here.
Okay, this one can go either way with you. Buccaneers are still the best team in NFC South.
We might have been wrong about the Falcons. I believe, if memory serves here, on Friday when we did our bold predictions, I do believe that you and I both said that, no, you picked the Saints to win the NFC South.
Yeah.
And I thought you were insane for that, and I may have been equally crazy for picking Atlanta, because at least at the time I thought, well, at least they've got a quarterback. I don't know how wrong I was.
Yeah, but NFC South, here comes Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, though, what a game he had Sunday.
Wow.
80% completion percentage. 289 yards.
Consider who that he played, though. I mean, come on.
I mean, Washington was the worst team in the NFC East last year. I'll grant you that. But you still got to do the work and beat up on the bad teams.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And he absolutely did that.
Look at his numbers. This has got to be the best QB numbers of week one, right?
So right now, Mayfield does have the NFL lead for passing touchdowns this season and passer rating. Tua threw for more yards than he did, but no one else threw for four touchdowns on Sunday.
Yeah,
Baker Mayfield
no
made it happen.
No picks.
No picks. You got to love it. Like, I don't know if he was ever going to develop this way in Cleveland. There's, lots of people have speculated that maybe that was the wake-up call he needed to get his you-know-what together. But
yeah.
If you're a Browns fan right now, you've really got to be just absolutely kicking yourself. We gave up that for Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson.
How'd that work out for us?
Oh, how are you guys feeling about that right now, huh?
Very
overreaction
bad.
Monday for you, huh, bud?
Yeah, all that's right. So good, I imagine.
So I'm sure that we probably at least have one or two Cowboy fans in the Sand Lake broadcasting area.
Do we? Does anyone outside
There's
of Dallas root for Dallas?
Somebody out there because they're America's team, bro.
I don't think anyone
America's team.
No one outside of the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area actually believes that. You will never convince me otherwise.
Well, anyway, hopefully we don't upset them.
I don't care if we do.
Cowboys made a mistake paying Dak Prescott. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
That is absolutely an overreaction. I know it wasn't a great game on Sunday for him, 179 yards. He did throw for a touchdown. He didn't make any particularly stupid mistakes. He didn't throw any picks. He still completed nearly 60% of his passes.
Yeah.
I don't think you can sit and say that, oh, this is absolutely, that was a mistake to pay him or anything like that. I mean, he still did throw for a touchdown. Brandon Cooks hauled one in. You only had one rushing touchdown and one passing touchdown on a day where you scored 33 points. Let's be fair. Dallas's offense, by and large, didn't need to do a whole lot, ultimately, to do what they did. Like, you had, four or five field goals on the day, so Brandon Aubrey certainly doing mighty fine. It was a good, great day for the special teams, obviously. And the defense. Like, they forced, quite a few interceptions, turnovers on downs for Cleveland. In fact, there was a punt return ultimately for a touchdown as well. Like, special teams was on their game Sunday, so it didn't really matter that Dak wasn't. And let's be honest, when we get into the regular season, deeper into the year, like, you're going to see that Dak to CeeDee Lamb connection that won so many games in the season for him last year, even though yesterday Slam was only held to like 61 yards and 5 catches. Like, you're going to see that rhythm get a little bit more in order here as the season goes along. The question is going to be, can he finally get it done in the playoffs? Like, that's kind of the reputation, deserved or otherwise, with him, is that, playoff choke artist.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be the question. If he can figure that out, then I don't see any reason why that team absolutely is not going to be rather dangerous come playoff time. Like, they're still going to make the playoffs no matter what. I think they're going to be a wild card, but I think they make the playoffs at least. So, ultimately, did they make a mistake paying him? No, because that's the going rate for a, I'm not going to say elite quarterback or anything like that.
Well, he's still putting meat in the seats. In Jerry World, they're filling the seats because they want to see Dak Prescott.
They do. Like, I don't feel like he gets a lot of crap that may or may not be necessarily well-deserved. But, again, I can't be mad at him for yesterday if I'm a Cowboys fan, because you didn't need him to be an all-pro yesterday. You just need him to do enough to keep you in the game and not completely blank the bet. I feel like you're fine. You'll be fine. The Cowboys will be fine, at least until we get past the wild card round of the playoffs. Sorry, it is what it is, man. You know what you got yourself into with that one. That just kind of is the story there. Do we have any? Was that it?
That's the one. That's the last one of that article that I found. But I've got others. Want to hit a break and we'll come back fresh?
Ah, we could do that. All right, let's go ahead and hit a break here. We'll come back. So I figure we should probably pause all the NFL talk to at least address the two college teams of some relevance here in this state. And my some wins that, well, a win that was not expected by most people except us. I mean, we called it in the picks on Friday.
Yeah.
And a loss that I think...
we all kind of figured out. I mean, first, the positive. Sparty got it done against the Terrapins. They were able to pull out a win. Good for them. Not like in their unis. Not enough green. Too much white. They're wearing their pajamas out on the field. So not a big fan of that. But then Michigan, I mean, before that, Michigan kind of really blanked the bed when it came to Texas.
They really did, didn't they?
I mean, I had a pick because, I mean, anybody who thought they were going to really build on their national title last year, they're not paying attention. There's a new coach. They're a new quarterback, new running back.
It's a new lot of things. They overhauled a lot with that team. But yes. What I did not expect is that they were going to get blown out the way they did.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I thought it was going to be closer than that. I'm sorry.
I think I did have
maybe that's because I just don't have a lot of faith in Quinn Ewers and Texas necessarily, but I thought it was going to be a closer game than it ultimately was.
Yeah, I mean, they really... They lost big to Texas. I think Michigan only put up 6 points on the whole night, so the whole afternoon. So, I mean, I don't know who they play next, but it was good to see them actually playing some actual competent
competition.
Yeah, as opposed to Fresno State in week one. But, I mean, it is what it is. So, hopefully they can regroup. But the Wolverine faithful, don't get your hopes up. I mean, enjoy that national title, but because it's not happening again. Not for a while.
No, you're a long ways away from getting back there, I have to say.
I mean, you got Harbaugh over in L.A., you got McCarthy on the IR, and Blake Corum, I don't remember where he went to.
He went to the Rams.
That's right.
Not that you saw anything out of him last night, but he is there.
Oh, I'm sure Hutchinson had a plan for his 5'9" frame.
Well, I mean, that's not really so much Hutch's thing. Like he's
going for the quarterback,
right?
He did get one sack on the night, and Aiden Hutchinson.
Didn't even play.
I'm going to go. Really didn't even play, huh?
Nope.
Aiden Hutchinson. I'm putting this on there. He is going to have a pick six within the next 3 games.
Okay.
Put that down. Take it to Vegas.
All right. Duly noted, sir. So, the first regular season loss for Michigan since 2021.
Yeah.
And Sharon Moore is convinced, that Michigan's not far away from a team like Texas. It seems like you couldn't have been any further away.
We saw that game. We saw the stats. And, you're a long ways away.
Yeah. I mean, look, Texas is a good team. Some might even argue great team. And they're going to make other teams look bad.
Last year, they would have beat them.
Well, yeah, last year you would have had Connor Stallions hanging out on someone's sideline to get all their plays. But, I mean, seriously, your placement players basically look, like, completely lost out there, man, especially your O-line. And no one seems to be holding up. You know, certainly the defensive front's not holding up either. Like, everything about it is just ugly, man.
Yeah.
And Davis Warren is arguably not a particularly good quarterback, which doesn't help things. But at that point, then that means you need to do something about the play calling. Like, you can't put him in situations where he's got to be making these, like, laser-accurate throws, because he's just seemingly not capable of doing that.
He's not there, no.
You're not going to get him to go through multiple reads. Like, and when the play is particularly predictable, you know, your defense is going to eat that guy alive. I mean, that's you had that on your that first interception. The Texas D-backs were just sitting at the sticks waiting for the ball to come to them and capitalized on it. That, unfortunately, is just kind of, you know, the sort of thing you expect when your play calling doesn't adjust to the caliber of QB that you have. But, you know, you don't really have, honestly, you don't have another option.
No.
That's just kind of the problem is you're going to have to kind of work through this because the guy behind him just is not ready.
Oh, not even, I mean, still got a couple of his baby teeth, I'm sure.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot yet there that ultimately, I know a lot of people thought this was going to be easily an 8-4 team. I'm not so convinced. Like, you, I think you guys are gonna, at this point, you'd be lucky to get 7 wins.
Ah, gosh, darn it. I really want to say you're wrong, but looking at the schedule and looking at what we've seen so far in 2 games, I don't know. I mean, coaching staff has got to address things.
Oh, certainly. So let's take a look at what the schedule looks like. This week you're playing Arkansas State, so you should win.
That's a W.
Yeah, you're favored by 22.5 in that game.
Wow.
Okay. USC, you're favored by 9.5, and I'm not sure that's entirely deserved here.
I'll give that one to U of M.
At USC, thus far, for what it's worth, is unbeaten, but they played 13th-ranked LSU and knocked them off, and then blew out Utah State, as one would expect. I feel like that one's going to be a lot closer than the right now than Vegas would
it's
indicate.
It's going to be close, but I think Michigan's going to win that one. So that puts them at 3-1.
Minnesota, you should beat.
4-1.
Washington, I think you're gonna lose.
Yeah, okay. 4-2. Yep.
Illinois, you should beat them, I would think.
That's 5-2.
You're losing to Oregon. You were
Ducks,
absolutely.
Yeah, 5-3. Yeah.
Michigan State.
Judging from what I saw with the them against the Terrapins. I'd almost think that it's going to be, I think it's going to be a Sparty party. It may.
We were supposed to lose by 9 in that game.
Yeah, well.
And it ended up coming.
Yeah, let's see what happens in a couple of weeks. But, I mean, let's see what happens. I mean, Michigan, that coach has got a few years under his belt where we've got a new coach. So, I mean, it's.
Well, no, we don't really have. Jonathan Smith's new here. He's. I mean, yes, he's not new as a head coach. He was coaching for, I believe, Oregon State before.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you
Michigan
forgot.
State, yeah. Tuck gone.
Yeah, no, we're no longer dealing with that. So, yeah, you both
Oops.
Have...
My fault.
Essentially new coaches.
32-0 Michigan. Okay, and moving on.
But you're looking realistically, honestly, probably 4 losses at that point, maybe 5 if Barty can pull that one out. Then you got Indiana, who you probably should beat, Northwestern, and you're not beating Ohio State. I'm sorry. It's not happening.
No, unfortunately. Man, I wish that was the case. Because even if you don't even sniff a national title, as long as you beat Michigan State, you beat Ohio State, that's a season.
That is normally, but I think there's far too many growing pains at this point for Michigan to overcome.
Oh, very green team.
Like I just ultimately don't see it happening as much as I'd like to at least see a competitive this year. And I think, like I said, you'll finish with a winning record and play in some, you know, Bob's Discount Tire Lube and Express Bowl.
No, oh, you're loving this. As you're broadcasting about Michigan's downfall, you're actually trying to uncork a bottle of champagne right now.
I have no idea what you're talking about, sir.
That is terrible. And I'm glad you held the party favors off of the microphone. I think that shows a certain level of professionalism. Good for you.
I like to think so. Yeah. You know, professionalism is what we do on this radio show, allegedly.
Sure the hell is.
So, I still think it's going to be a winning season, but you're not... I don't think you're winning the Big Ten. I don't think you're going to be in the playoff necessarily.
No.
Even with the expanded, 12-team field. Still don't think you're getting in the playoff even.
No, it's not looking good.
It's going to be a year of growing pains for Michigan. That's for sure. Like there's ultimately no way around it. And, you better hope that Sherrone Moore doesn't end up getting you know, tagged as a repeat offender in this in the investigation into the scandal from last year, because otherwise it's going to be a really bad time for
him. Oh, yeah.
And things are really going to be disappointing going forward. Let's hit a quick break here. We'll come back and we'll finish off an Overreaction Monday here on Happy Hour. Briefly, before we get back into football, and I promise we will here because, I mean, it's an Overreaction Monday, and that's kind of what we do around here. Are you as surprised as I am that the Tigers have suddenly found themselves 3.5 games out of a wild card spot, dude?
They really found a way to get hot at, I'm not going to say the right time, because the right time would have been a couple of months ago.
The right time would have been before the trade deadline.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can't count them out at this point. I mean, if they make it to a wild card spot, I think they're just going to be cannon fodder for whatever team they get matched up with.
But I don't care because playoffs, dude.
Playoffs. Yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen playoffs for the Motor City Kitties, which I know I called the Lions that last Friday. Shut up.
you call them, I think, every Friday.
Yeah, pretty much. So I guess, I mean, they've been putting the work in. I want them to see some sort of revenue from that.
Some sort of return on the investment, such as it is.
Yeah, because then that fuels the next season.
Yeah, you would hope that. Like, I often question whether momentum really carries over from season to season very often in sports, but it would seem like we've seen some, you know, growth of that sort from the Lions, certainly, from the Red Wings a little bit less so.
Yep. I mean, let's see what happens. I mean, keep going. They've been finding ways to win. I mean, last Thursday, they were down 3-0 going into the ninth. It was like the kind of game that, you know, kids talk about in their backyard, or bottom of the ninth. You know, who's going to hit the, you know, and it ended up being a grand slam, winning the game.
Right, when you were down about absolutely as much as you could have been, like you're down 3-0, you haven't scored, you've been shut out to this point. And then Friday happens in extra innings. Have I mentioned, by the way, how much I hate the ghost runner in extra innings rule?
That is so stupid.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. And that ultimately kind of burned the Tigers a bit. Like, that actually kind of lengthened the game.
Yeah.
If anything, ultimately. So two outs, top of the 10th. Cole Keats hits a single, scores Kreidler, gives the Tigers the lead. They just need to get through the bottom of the inning, and, well, of course, double to score the ghost runner and retie the game. So it happened again. A's didn't get their walk-off yet. The 11th. Again, ghost runner Torkelson advances to third. Jake Rogers gets intentionally walked. Parker Meadows. They walked. Intentionally walked Jake Rogers to get to the guy who hit the grand slam the other night.
Oh, that's just an arrogance thing. I want this guy.
That is certainly a choice, is it not?
Not a good one.
No, not at all.
Here we are.
And Meadows scored two runs on a double there. Then the bomb of the inning, Shelby Miller. Miller had been finding the strike zone. Not that it really mattered, as terrible as the umps were. Then ghost runner advances to third. Seth Brown homers to tie the game yet again. 12th inning now. Riley Green giving up got a single, scored the ghost runner, gave the Tigers a lead again. Double play. That's the end of that. Breeski back up. Sack bunt for Nick Allen. It sent the ghost runner to third. A's contested the out call. It unfortunately got overturned. This could have been done if not for that. Then Lawrence Butler walks to load things up. Rooker hits a sack fly. Game's tied, of course. 13 innings by the time all is said and done. McKinstry gets a one-out walk. Rogers loads the bases. But we don't get another grand slam from Parker Meadows. God, I was sitting there at the bar hoping, like, is this seriously going to happen again for the second time this many nights? Really? It did not. And then in the home half of the inning, Seth Brown, one-out single, scores the ghost runner. This is all crap, and I hate it.
Yeah.
But then Sunday happens. Of course, you won Saturday, but whatever. 2-1 game. But Sunday, Trey Sweeney, the guy we got in the Jack Flaherty trade, he had a day Went 4-for-4 on the day. Just had it, had himself a game like no other. You had just the offense looked good all the way around, really. It was about as much as you could possibly have asked for out of this team. 9-1, the final there. You're now tied with the Mariners, 3.5 games back of the final wild card. And it looks like suddenly Minnesota's slipping out of that race. KC has overtaken them. You opened the day today with Minnesota 2.5 games up on, or with the Royals 2.5 games up on Minnesota, and you're sitting 3.5 games back of a wild card spot. This is where it gets interesting, because you have a chance to actually do this, and a schedule that is at least somewhat favorable to you pulling this off. You face Colorado next. Colorado is hot garbage. They have always been hot garbage and probably always will be hot garbage. They are the currently the worst team in the National League. Ooh. You have them for 3 games. And then you head to Baltimore. Okay, not so great. They're second place in the AL. They're firmly in a playoff spot right now. Not great. But after that, the schedule kind of gets a little bit better for you. You've got from there, you go to KC. Should be able to take 2 or 3 from the Royals. Then you're back to Baltimore. But you've got Tampa, who's the worst team in the AL East. And you finish the year with the White Sox. That seems like, if you like, your destiny is very much in your own hands right now. Like, there's no way, seemingly, that this team shouldn't be able to get it done against the obviously the Orioles are a whole different topic, but you have a schedule that favors you very much so. Seattle, on the other hand, they have to go and play Texas, who's currently sitting there. Also still fighting for a wild card spot. They are playing the Yankees, Texas again, Houston, and then they finish the season against Oakland. So,
But still, I mean, that's a lot to go through.
I would argue that schedule is probably worse than ours. And Seattle's not well-equipped to face them as we are. The KC's got to go on the road to the Yankees. They got to play us. They have 3 in Pittsburgh, which should be kind of a gimme. They play San Fran, which is hovering around 500 ball right now. And they play the Nationals and the Braves on the road. Neither one of these particularly, you know, bode that well. Washington's not doing great. They're already eliminated from postseason contention. But they do have to face the Braves, who are, as we learned, no slouches. And then the Twins, the other team you still have to kind of overcome here. They will be facing, to wrap up their season, the Angels, yeah, okay, that's kind of a gimme of a series, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cincy, again, kind of a gimme. Cleveland, they're currently the team that has the lead in the division, and then they have to go on the road to Boston, and then they face Miami, who's terrible, and also Baltimore. I'm not saying that it's going to be an easy path forward here, but your schedule isn't any more difficult than any of the teams ahead of you, and if the young guys keep producing it the way they are, you have a real chance to get back in and claw your way into a wild card spot somehow.
Yep.
I think it's entirely doable.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to do, but it's going to be at least, I'm saying it's not out of the realm of possibility that you could do it. Like, right. This team is really, they're playing arguably some of the best baseball they have all year of late. Like, It's not like when it seemed like there were stretches where they were absolutely tanking. You've now won, so 3 of your last 4 of your last, let me take a look here, 5 of your last 7, or 5 of your last 8, sorry. And 2 of the losses were ultimately in overtime. Like, you're playing tough. You're playing gritty. You reeled off a nice little stretch against Chicago and the Angels to boot. Like, this is the time of the year where they're starting to show up, or the bats are really showing up more than they have in recent history. And I think we could seriously be looking at, dare I say, the Tigers could be a playoff team. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm hoping so. The way they've caught fire, Sure, absolutely. I mean, maybe it's one of those Cinderella stories where, you know, you can see, like, you have to watch the home video, the World Series Tigers home video. It was looking pretty dark in April or May, and then, you know, they'd really turn it on. I mean, it could happen. It's baseball. I mean, there's so many games in there, and things could change with a swing.
No, you're absolutely right on that, and it'll be interesting to see if they can keep up the momentum. Going into Colorado certainly should be able to.
That's a gimme.
The only things that concern me are those two series against the Orioles, because the Orioles are good.
They were supposed to be garbage. Didn't anybody give them the memo? Because last couple seasons, they have been garbage.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like...
No, wait a minute. Last season, they actually did well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Oh, yeah. In fact, they finished first in the East last year.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
So, I mean...
I'm still living in 2017.
But then they go and get knocked out in the first round of Texas. After winning 100 games and 101 games in the regular season.
But Texas is still Texas.
They are. But I don't know, Texas is a little less Texas this year, man. They're not doing great. They're third place.
They find another gear. I mean, they're the Texas Rangers. Weird, they only have one World Series championship under their belt, but they've got one.
Yeah, crazy to think that that's the case for as well as those teams hit in, like, especially in like the 2000s and stuff.
Yeah,
it is really weird that is a team that just has never been able to get the big one. Because I mean, there that stretch in the especially in the later years of the Ron Washington era, you had guys like, you know, Beltre and Kinsler and Josh Hamilton just tearing the cover off the ball every night, and you got to two World Series in that span, but couldn't. Couldn't put either one of them away.
Meanwhile, Florida's putting a couple together. At least two, if I remember correctly.
They do, and those were
the 90s and 2000s.
And those are the only 2 years they've made the playoffs in their existence.
Hey, they're like, hey, we're two for two.
Like, give
Florida Marlins, we're two for two. Oh, Miami Marlins, we're two for two.
Right. Yeah, give them credit. Like, until 2020, I guess. That's no longer the case for now. Two for two in the two for four in the postseason.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
But literally until like 5 years ago, they'd never not won a World Series when they made the playoffs. Which is crazy when you think about it. What's even crazier still is that even if the Tigers don't ultimately end up making the playoffs, we can sit back and laugh at the misfortune of the Chicago White Sox.
Of course.
111 losses. I believe the modern era record is 120. We're 9 games away from that at this point.
Is that the Mets or the Tigers, the 0-3 Tigers?
No, the Mets have the current futility record.
Thank God.
In the modern era.
I know the Tigers were getting close. Back in like 2003, I believe it was. They were not looking good.
Oh yeah, 2003. I think it was against the Royals that they ultimately ended up saving themselves from being that, having that all-time just, what is the word I'm looking
Albatross
for?
Albatross around their neck.
Yeah, having to wear that forever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, of the modern era of Major League Baseball, the record is 120. You're 9 games away from that, and you've got 18 games left. They have to go at least 500 the rest of the way to avoid even a tie for the all-time record.
And that's not going to happen.
I don't think so. Well, they play Oakland, so that's a gimme. They're going to... I expect them to lose all 3 games to Cleveland coming up. Expect them to lose to Los Angeles even. The Padres should be able to take a couple, you would think. I would assume the Angels actually play them 6 games this last stretch. I think they're going to at least go 4-for-6 during that span.
Yeah.
And then... you play Detroit, and as you'll remember, the last time these two teams met up, it did not go well. Detroit swept the White Sox in all 4 of those games.
Well, they're a hot team right now, so if I was a betting man, if I was Drew over in a betting facility, I would be, you know, going for the Tigers on that one.
No, I have to say I probably would be too. I'd call for them to sweep that series. So it looks like we're going to have, you know, possibly the best of all worlds here. The Tigers make the playoffs and the White Sox become the worst team in the history of ever. And that's kind of
where... I'm cool with that.
I'm entirely good with it. Got about 90 seconds before we got to get out of here. So the Lions, we've covered it. Good, bad, and ugly of Sunday's game. They go on to face Tampa. They go on to face Baker Mayfield against, you know, and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Like, that's, they're big favorites over the Bucks, despite the fact that Baker Mayfield did what he did. But they're 6.5-point favorites to open this thing. Is it just, are people just on the Lions hype train and there's just nothing that's going to derail that? Or are we just looking at the Bucks and seeing that, yeah, that was a great performance, but it was against a garbage team?
The Rams are not a garbage team. Or you were talking about the Bucks.
The Bucks. Well, the Commanders.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't know. Burrow's, he knows what he's doing. We saw the tape on him. We saw the stats. I'm hoping Campbell is really
getting those guys. Yeah.
Mayfield, yeah. Hopefully Campbell is really getting his guys ready to go for that one.
I find it funny that, like, once again, we're facing the two teams we faced in the first two rounds of the playoffs last year.
Yep.
And, well, I like the results against both of them then, and I like it now going forward. Like, don't sleep on it by any means.
No.
But I think this game was the wake-up call the Lions ultimately needed to really kind of right the ship. We gotta go, though. Stick around. Sessions is up next. I'll be well. Talk to you tomorrow at 3. See ya.